I had an annual checkup, I don't know, about 2 weeks ago. And while I was at the doctor's office, Jim Sossman, my physician, said, hey, did you get your flu shot yet? And I said, no, give it to me. So I've got my flu shot out of the way a couple of weeks ago. Sort of a serendipity. It was great to have it over and have it done and know that I have some protection from the flu. You might be in that situation, or maybe you're not. We're going to talk with Dr. Jim Conway about it from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health to talk about why it's important for everybody to get a flu shot, how to treat it if you aren't quite able to dodge the flu, what to do about it. And he's certainly happy to answer your questions as well when you join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you, so join in. And Dr. Jim Conway, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks, Larry. Great to see you again.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. We hear the phrase the flu, and we've talked about this before. Hear that phrase a lot, but what does it mean and what does it not mean?
Well, I think that many of us were mistrained and misinformed when we were younger by grandma when she would talk about stomach flus and things like that.
Yeah.
Influenza is a respiratory virus, and it really has this propensity to cause very severe respiratory disease, in pneumonias especially, in the older individuals and in high-risk patients who have immune deficiencies or other medical issues. But what we've also discovered over the last decades is that it also has this idiosyncratic, unpredictable side that allows it to cause really fairly serious disease, even in very healthy individuals.
Yeah. How is it transmitted?
No. Transmitted just through snot, people sneezing and coughing and getting things on surfaces, and then mostly actually from people's own hands as they touch those surfaces and then touch their faces, because if you look around, people are constantly touching their noses and their faces.
I've been in a situation where I've met somebody just before going in to do my radio show and the guest, and we shake hands, and then the guest says, oh, I've been sick, I haven't been feeling good. And then I try to put my hand to my face. Try to not put your hand to your face for 45 minutes.
It's tough.
It's very hard to do. It really is very hard to do. Oh, man. Well, again, we lost a caller there. But you can join in, 1-800-642-1234. So how do you tell if it's the flu or maybe if it's a cold or something else?
Well, they both start off and it's the same types of symptoms with some runny nose. The typical flu, though, has a fever with it where most of the typical colds don't. And then for people, unfortunately, that get a full-blown case of influenza, often accompanied by a pretty severe headache and a lot of muscle aches, a lot more lower respiratory symptoms then, so a lot more cough. And for people that have pre-existing breathing conditions like asthma and things like that, can really get pretty serious.
I can remember there was one year that I did not get my flu shot, and I got the flu. And I vowed would be the last time I ever went without a shot, even though it doesn't guarantee you're not going to get the flu.
Right, and that's actually an important thing to talk about. And I think that you'll hear people that are disparaging the flu vaccine talk about low efficacy rates in certain seasons. And efficacy is really a black and white thing. So when you're immunized and then actually get the flu, you have a very mild case. But if you're doing a study that's black and white that says, did you get the flu or not, a positive means that technically the vaccine was not efficacious. What we're really trying to do is not only prevent severe disease, but also to prevent transmission to others. And so what we really want to look at when we look at how good is the vaccine is, even if you get the flu, do you get a mild case? And that's really where I think most people kind of lose the forest and the trees.
Yeah, that's a very good point. We have callers online. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. And Brenda, just joining us now from Dubuque, Iowa. Brenda, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having my call. I just had a quick question. I hope I don't dissuade people from getting the flu shot because I've always gotten one, and I'm glad I've gotten one. But this year, I got a flu shot 2 weeks ago, and my deltoid is still so sore that I can't lay on it. It hurts, almost constantly. It has gotten better, But it's still very painful. And I called, I got it, you know, just at a drugstore area. And they said, well, you know, take an aspirin and call us in the morning, basically. And I was just wondering if that was something that is just like something from this year's flu shot that we can just expect that maybe more people are, I'm just wondering.
Sure.
No, thanks, Brenda. I mean, we appreciate the question, and I think it's always important to acknowledge that by getting an injection, you are subjecting yourself to something that's a little unnatural. We certainly expect when we're putting an intramuscular injection in that the muscle is going to complain a little bit, and certainly there is generally some pain and swelling. Yours sounds a little bit more extreme, and it does make me wonder if there may have been a little bit of a hematoma or something like that, and that's where occasionally you can get a little bit of bleeding into the area, and you can actually get the equivalent of sort of a deep muscle bruise. You know, occasionally even, you know, it is possible to hit something and not exactly be in the meat of the muscle. So I think it's, you know, certainly one of those things, if it continues, you may want to have it looked at. The other possibility is that it's completely unrelated, of course, and that we all have muscle strains and pulls and those kinds of things, and certainly something that goes on that long sounds more, in some ways, like a muscle injury of some sort.
Yeah.
It does, but it would be so coincidental because it was immediately after.
Right.
Agreed. No. I mean, no. It sounds like it probably was related.
Yeah, probably related. Thanks, Brenda, for calling. Appreciate it. And I, frankly, when I get my flu shot every year, arm's a little sore, but it's usually, you know, the next day it's pretty much.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, you're basically, you know, stimulating the immune system. You're irritating the immune system with the idea of trying to trick it into thinking it's already gone through some particular disease, and so it does get activated. And so that's where I think most vaccines do cause some local pain, a little bit of swelling sometimes, and that's the nature of the beast, that once you've, you know, sort of poked at the immune system and agitated it, you want it to respond like that. And in many ways, that's actually reassuring that there really is something actually happening.
Yeah. Thanks again for calling, Brenda. Appreciate it. We were talking about the flu, some conversation. I'm trying to think of where. Doesn't matter. Somebody said, well, how come we have these flu viruses every year? Where do they come from? And why can't we get rid of them?
Well, influenza viruses are really fascinating. There's a whole group of these things. There's actually influenza A, B, and C. And then every animal species actually has its own flu species as well. And so when you hear about people worried about bird flu and swine flus and all those kinds of things, it's because each species actually has influenza, and these things get passed around and then occasionally jump from certain species into humans. And so these things circulate continuously all around the globe. They tend to circulate more during winter months. And so when it's summer up here, it's winter down in the southern hemisphere, and they're circulating much more heavily in those regions. And in fact, that information and that ongoing constant surveillance of watching these viruses circulate is actually the information that's then used to decide what goes into the vaccine for the coming year. So sometime in February and March, a whole bunch of smart people sit down and look at what circulated in the southern hemisphere in the previous season, along with what circulated in the United States in the previous years, and decides which strains do they want to put into the vaccine. The other thing to remember is that, you know, influenza actually circulates year-round. So though, you know, we think about this as sort of a winter thing, there is low-level influenza circulation, even in the United States, throughout the spring, summer, and fall. And in fact, we already have some influenza here in Wisconsin already this time of year.
Oh, we do?
We do.
Oh. Steve in Rome, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. See, I just wanted to confirm that previous caller's reaction to the shot.
Yeah.
My wife got a flu shot a couple of weeks ago, and she showed me this morning as she was actually leaving for her hairdresser that she showed me her shoulder, and she says, look at this thing, and it's still black and blue, about the size of a 50-cent piece, and she said, I don't understand this.
No, that's definitely a hematoma. So when you see that black and blue area, that's an area where there's been some bleeding after the injection, and so that's a true hematoma that's going to have to go through that breakdown and eventually is going to turn that lovely greenish-yellow color as those things go away.
Okay.
But it'll go away.
It will, but it's unfortunate. I mean, those are, you know, the small side effect things that we all have to deal with when we're taking on something like this and trying to enable our immune systems to be protected against this nasty virus.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Steve, for calling. Appreciate your call. These strains, they don't blow in from the south, do they?
They get transmitted by humans as humans travel around. I mean, that's basically how most diseases now get introduced into new areas, is as animals and humans are brought into those areas, they have all sorts of things that come along with them.
It's kind of, I think about here on the University of Wisconsin campus, where I teach classes and so forth, and students go... are here, and we go through some ailments sometimes in the fall, and then here comes winter break or Christmas break, and then everybody flies out to the four corners of the world and all come back with a whole new set.
It's absolutely true. I mean, college campuses are really a nexus for disease exchange. And if you look at some of the most recent outbreaks, where there's been meningococcal B outbreaks on some college campuses and mumps outbreaks on some college campuses, that's exactly why that happens, is you're bringing young people together that then do swap viruses and other things.
Dr. Jim Conway, our guest, right up until 12:30 today. We'll be back after the news. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at the flu season and getting a flu shot. Should you get one? Most likely the answer to that is yes, and probably 99.99% of the cases. I think I'll ask Dr. Jim Conway about it. He's a professor of pediatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, also director of the Pediatric Infectious Disease Fellowship Training Program, and one of the associate directors of the UW-Madison Global Health Institute. So he's got a lot on his plate, but he does not mind at all talking about flu and flu shots, because I think he's a big proponent of getting them. You may have a question about the flu season or about the flu or about shots. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Do you get the flu shot every year? Why or why not? Have you had the flu? How severe? Call us at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. Is there somebody who shouldn't get the shot?
Well, the vaccines are only approved in children 6 months and up, so infants don't receive the flu vaccine until after 6 months of age. One of the most important groups, actually, is pregnant women. And it's been very clear now, as we've been more aggressive about trying to get pregnant women inoculated, that protects not only them, and pregnant women are actually one of the groups that have more severe versions of influenza if they get it during pregnancy, but that actually protects the infants as well and decreases about two-thirds of the cases of influenza in those very young infants. Other than that, there are very few groups that really shouldn't receive the vaccine. There are certainly a lot of different vaccines available.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at how many there are out there.
Yeah, there's now specific vaccines for specific groups. So in the older individuals, of which, of course, you're not one of them, the high-potency vaccine was designed, which has a lot more influenza antigen to try to do a better job of stimulating the immune response in that population that doesn't seem to respond as well. And then in younger individuals, there's the flu mist, which is the nasal flu vaccine, which is a live version of the virus, gives very good immunity, especially in children, but obviously you don't want to be giving that to certain people that have immune deficiencies. And so then we have the injectable vaccines. And there's two versions of those now. There's one that's called a trivalent vaccine that has two types of A influenza and one type of B. And then more recently, most of the companies have been moving into a quadrivalent vaccine, which has two types of the A viruses plus two types of the B virus. And that's been important because B is the one that tends to show up later in the season. And often when people would think that their vaccine had faded with the immunity and wasn't working well, it was really that there was just another strain that showed up later in the season. So that quadrivalent seems to be picking up some of that slack.
Yeah, that's actually something I brought up with Dr. Jim Sossman when I had my shot. I said, well, is this too early to get my shot? He said, really, that's kind of not really, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, no, now that we understand better about how the immunology works for these kinds of things, for most individuals that receive an injectable vaccine, it actually carries well into the spring and even into the next summer.
Sarah in West Bend has a question for you. So let's, Dr. Conway, so let's go there. Hi, Sarah. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thanks. I have multiple sclerosis, and I've had two neurologists, both specializing in MS, that have given me conflicting information about whether or not I should receive a flu shot. I know for sure I shouldn't receive the nasal mist in any regard, but my one neurologist even went to great lengths filling out forms saying that I was exempt from the flu shot, saying that it could induce an MS attack for work-related issues. But then my other neurologist was really ambivalent to that knowledge and said it was fine to get one. So I'm very confused.
All right, and I get to be the tiebreaker on this one, huh?
Yeah.
It is an interesting quandary, and I think that it is important to really talk to people about this that are caring for you. Obviously, multiple sclerosis is a difficult condition, and it is the immune system being sort of overactive. And one of the things that you always have to balance in those situations is what's worse, stimulating it a little bit with a flu vaccine versus the risk of actually getting real wild-type influenza and having that really turn on the immune system and really rock the boat. And so I think that's where you're getting a little bit of a difference of opinion. I do think that in most cases, we specifically do try to identify patients where if they got influenza, it would be particularly harmful, and have specifically tried to reach out to them and make it easier and certainly encourage them to get influenza vaccine, because wild-type influenza, the real deal, really will rock your immune system quite aggressively. So I think it's always important with these kinds of individual things, talk to your provider, but make sure that you've asked sort of on both sides of the fence, which one do they think would actually be worse?
Yeah.
My strategy the last few years, since I no longer work, I'm a stay-at-home mom now, is to vaccinate my two adolescent children.
That's very wise.
If they don't bring it home, then yeah. I haven't vaccinated myself then.
No, I think it's very wise when there's high-risk people in the family to not only try to immunize them if it's feasible, but to immunize as much as possible the rest of the family members who would be the ones that would bring it home. And certainly adolescents are great at bringing home all sorts of diseases.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Good luck to you.
Appreciate it very much. Judy in Fort Atkinson, it's your turn. Thanks for calling, Judy.
Well, thank you for having me. I was allergic to eggs as a child. I'm not anymore. But as a little long ago, as 2 years ago, I asked if I could get the flu shot, and the doctor said I wouldn't give it to you.
Great question. No, it's a great question, and I'm glad you asked. And it's actually been a really interesting and hot topic of conversation and some research about what to do about egg allergies. You know, it turns out there were a lot of people that were told that they were egg allergic or had sort of minor reactions, and because many flu vaccines are actually formulated in eggs, they had been told to stay away from them. And it turns out then when allergists have gone and really studied this more aggressively, that most people, that even those that are listed as being egg allergic, as long as they can eat cooked eggs, can actually tolerate just regular flu vaccines quite nicely. And so we sort of euphemistically call it the muffin rule. If you can eat a muffin that has about the same amount of egg protein as a vaccine, you can probably get the regular vaccine. But the other part was that there have been a couple of companies now that have actually derived new forms of vaccine that don't even have eggs as any part of the process. And so there's actually a new recombinant influenza vaccine that's available specifically for people that have very severe reactions to eggs. Those include things like anaphylaxis and actual angioedema. So actually, the beauty of things at this point in time is that there's lots of options for people that have been listed as having some sort of egg sensitivity.
Hmm.
Great. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Judy, for calling. Appreciate it. Ben in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Ben. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how are we doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Yeah. So I guess my question is kind of more broad with vaccinations in general, but, you know, definitely considering the flu vaccination with our daughter. Now, we have a young daughter, and she has always had pretty adverse effects to vaccinations. And we kind of have her on a pretty limited vaccinations when we have appointments with her because of that reason. Now, the last appointment, her 18-month appointment, she received the MMR and had a fever over 105 for 4 days straight.
Yeah.
I guess kind of my question, we're coming up on the 2-year appointment here, and my question is, are there certain, you know, certain children that are kind of more at risk, and whether it's, you know, beneficiary to get the vaccination, or are they more at risk getting it than they would be not receiving it?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. I mean, life is a bell curve, and everybody is sort of somewhere on that curve, and there are going to be people that have a little bit more heightened reactions to either viral infections or to vaccines. We certainly know people that you can think of where one person gets the same virus and they have a little bit of runny nose and they're fine, and other people may have high fever and feel pretty miserable, and you're pretty sure it's the same virus. And so it doesn't surprise me that there are people that have a little bit more serious reactions. What you really have to think about is what the severity would be if they actually got the disease itself. And, you know, as I mentioned before, influenza is a pretty nasty actor with really high fevers, and you know, most kids are pretty miserable. And there are, you know, a couple of different options for kids, because there's the nasal flu vaccine that does seem to give a little bit more robust immunity in young kids, saves you a shot, and doesn't seem to have as many of those systemic side effects, at least in some of those kids. And so I think you could consider that. And then as you're talking to your provider and sort of balancing which are the most important shots at each visit, I think it's really important to recognize that influenza is by far the most common of all the vaccine-preventable diseases right now circulating in the United States. So as you prioritize, and you know, I appreciate that you're trying to protect your daughter as much as possible, and clearly trying to do the right thing for her by getting her vaccines. Influenza is a very, very common illness, and it does unfortunately kill a couple hundred children every year, many of whom are perfectly healthy kids. So I do think that, not to scare you, but it is one of the more common illnesses that circulates, and the vaccines really are very effective.
Well, there we go. Thank you for calling, Ben. I appreciate it. Nancy in Milwaukee has a question. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning to you all. I need to have this flu shot specifically developed for people over the age of 65. It's called Fluzone. And I'm having trouble finding it because I have called several pharmacies, and they tell me, and I tell them what it is I want, and they tell me, well, we have this new quadrivalent, the one that you just got done mentioning, and that'll do just as well. Now, my understanding about the Fluzone is that it doesn't necessarily have more different antigens. It has 4 times the amount of the one specific giving the older person whose immunity system may not be as strong anymore a better chance of not getting the flu.
Yeah, questions. That's a good call.
And
good
Nancy,
question.
And your understanding is spot on accurate. So you're welcome to come and take my chair and finish up the rest of this conversation. No, the Fluzone HD is what it's called. Actually, so the company Sanofi Pasteur, most of their vaccines are called Fluzone. Their specific one for the older individuals is called Fluzone HD, and it is a high potency vaccine. It's got almost 6 times more of each of the antigens. And the problem right now, and the reason you're getting sort of differing opinions, is that it currently only is a trivalent vaccine in its current formulation. They are working to develop it into a quadrivalent like the others. And so there is this trade-off that everybody has to be aware of, that you're giving a vaccine that's probably going to give better immunity in older individuals, but it doesn't include both types of B virus that are in the quadrivalent vaccine. The good news, and I think that the reason that most of us feel that the older individuals should be going with the HD vaccine, is that B disease tends to be milder. Little children, when they get it, are the ones that actually get the sickest from that. And most adults have had B enough times that they probably have some residual immunity. So in general, I would support what you're trying to do and try to get hold of the HD if you can. Now, with that said, if your particular area or your particular providers don't have access to it, I wouldn't wait too long and miss an opportunity. And we've been telling people that every year, and I think it's especially important this year. You know, there's so many manufacturers, there's so many different vaccines. Some of them have their product available a little bit earlier than others, and we don't want people waiting and waiting and waiting for a particular type and miss an opportunity and then get sick. We know this year, for instance, that the shipping of the FluMist, the nasal vaccine, is a little bit delayed in many parts of the state, and so we're encouraging people, even though the kids may not be all that happy about having to get an injection rather than the nasal spray, that they should try to get whatever they can as at the earliest convenience.
And in Nancy's case, here's something I never thought of until just this instant. Would you ever suggest that somebody like Nancy get the one shot that and then later get the other shot?
I mean, so we certainly wouldn't want to suggest that as a routine thing.
Right.
But I think if somebody was going to be in a particularly high-risk situation and wanted to sort of go with something immediately. But if you were going to be, you know, traveling extensively in areas where there are flu outbreaks and wanted some additional immunity, I suppose, you know, somebody could, in a special circumstance, get a second dose.
Okay, there we go. Thank you, Nancy, for calling. Well, Kristen in Madison has a question. I think that kind of relates to what we just heard here. Kristen, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks. So my question is, where would you find some of the vaccines that you're talking about? So like the quadrivalent vaccine, is that something that like a provider would have, or Walgreens everywhere? You see flu vaccine posters and...
Yeah, these are all now basically commonly available in most of the providers that offer vaccines. So, you know, yes, most of the pharmacies now are offering vaccines, and that's certainly a great way to help people get access to vaccines, because obviously it's a pain and sometimes problematic to try to get appointments in certain providers' offices. So we've been fortunate that pharmacists have stepped up and are offering vaccines and obviously can do those off hours and make things a lot more convenient for people. So most of the providers do have some mix of quadrivalent. Many of the providers are stocking the HD vaccine for the older individuals. And then it's sometimes a little bit more challenging in certain areas to get the FluMist version for kids and young adults. But you should be able to find most of them in all the communities around Wisconsin.
There we go.
Great.
Yeah, thanks, Kristen, for calling. Appreciate it. Harp in Washburn, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. What's the meaning of its designation you hear people use every so often, like H5N3?
Yeah, that's a good question.
That's
too.
A great question. So the A strains of influenza are typified by certain molecules on the surface. So there's hyaluronidase and neuraminidase is where the H and the N come from. And then they're basically numbered depending on the conformation of those particular molecules, and those are then what are used to name each of the viruses as they're identified. And so when you're talking about things in the bird flu or the outbreak settings, you hear people talk about H5N1 and H1N1, and they're basically just a naming strategy for people that work on these viruses in laboratories. And then beyond that, then most of the viruses then also get a name of where the primary location was, where it was identified and where it circulates. And so you'll see things like Brisbane, the H1N1 a couple of years ago was actually named after Wisconsin. So wherever mm-hmm. these things are identified primarily, they get to throw their name on them.
And thanks again, Harp, for calling. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Donna in Hartford next. Donna, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, yes, thank you. Well, I have to run opposition to all of this cheerleading for flu immunization. I understand for those with severely weakened immune systems, but really, in our society, especially the United States, I can't speak for any other country, where is the education to teach people how to create and maintain a healthy immune system so that these vaccinations don't continue to just dumb us down like all the antibiotics have? The immune system is in place for a reason, and it can be very self-sustaining if people understand how to support it and how to keep their colons clean and full of good flora. These things don't even have to happen.
Well, what do you think? Thank you, Donna, for calling. Appreciate it. What do you think?
Donna, I appreciate the perspective, and I think one of the things that we all need to remember is that these things are not mutually exclusive. So there's absolutely no reason not to continue to encourage people to have healthy diets and healthy lifestyles. And certainly within any of the influenza and other immunization programs, we continue to support other basic healthy habits. You know, there's certainly no reason that people shouldn't continue to breastfeed for young infants to maintain health that way. We also absolutely advocate for careful hand washing, and as a matter of fact, many public health measures include trying to encourage or to discourage much in the way of hand contact. So I think many of us in churches and similar gatherings during winter months, when people would traditionally shake hands, actually defer that during the season just to try to encourage more healthy hygiene. So there's absolutely no reason that people shouldn't continue to try to do many of the things that you're talking about and maintain a healthy lifestyle and maintain as much as you can, boosting to the immunity, again, so that that's one tool in the armamentarium of trying to protect ourselves against these sometimes really tragic diseases.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Steve wondered if, since he's going to be traveling to Panama in the next month, will his flu shot keep him safe while he's abroad?
That's a great question. And certainly travelers are some of the people that are at risk for acquiring some of the more novel viruses. Panama has usually, and most of Central America, fairly similar virus circulation to what we have here in North America. But there is always a possibility for people that are traveling to faraway areas where some of these newer strains are starting to circulate that you may be exposed. The good news for many of the strains that are in the vaccines currently is that there is cross protection. And so when we talk about influenza viruses as they change, we talk about them shifting and drifting. Most of the genetic mutations that happen are drifting, and so they become minorly different from what they originally mm-hmm. were. And so the vaccine continues to protect even as those viruses mutate throughout the season. Really, very rarely, but when it happens, it's a big deal, do we get a major shift where all of a sudden a brand new virus suddenly pops up. And so that's when we all had the flurry of concern about the H1N1 a couple of years ago. That was because that was a brand new strain that we really hadn't seen in some years suddenly pop up and really caused a lot of problems.
Carolyn, calling from Illinois, has a question for you. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. I'm 65. I've never had a flu shot. I'm very conscientious about what I eat, organic, et cetera. I have pernicious anemia. I had radiation therapy for breast cancer in 2009, and I've had another biopsy with a lot of radiation. I read somewhere that when you've had a lot of radiation, there are some immunizations that you should avoid. I've just been really hesitant about the flu shot.
Yeah, so I think when people have gone through radiation, and by the way, I hope you're doing well, and I commend you on fighting the fight that and dealing with all that you're dealing with. With radiation therapy, those are certainly in some circumstances ways that the immune system is diminished as part of that therapy. And so there are certain vaccines, especially live viral vaccines, that we tend to tell people that have had their immune system suppressed that they should try to avoid. So in reference to influenza, you know, you would be somebody who I would tell to avoid the nasal live viral vaccine. And there's other live viral vaccines that we also give. One of the other ones that may be pertinent in your age group is the zoster vaccine, which is also a live version of the chickenpox, but in a much more high potency form to try to prevent shingles in older individuals. So I think those two would be the ones that would be most pertinent in your age group.
And thanks for calling. And if we, and in 30 seconds, if we get the flu, despite all this, what do you do?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, fluids, hydration, antipyretics, you know, acetaminophen and ibuprofen are important. There are antiviral drugs available, though. And so if you figure out very quickly early on that you've been infected with influenza, you can contact your provider, and often you would be eligible for an antiviral medication. Most of them currently that are used in this area are called Tamiflu or mm-hmm. oseltamivir. We do have resistance issues periodically show up with some of the strains, so I think everybody needs to be aware of that, that it's not going to be an answer every year for everyone. But for those of you that may not have been immunized and may contract flu, that is an option. And then sometimes if there's a lot of contact and circulation, we'll even use them prophylactically as a preventive in certain families if they've not been immunized.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thank you so much for being with us today. Dr. Jim Conway, Professor of Pediatrics at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.